Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today as we visit with Mark Dwyer. His business, been with us many times, by the way, his business is Landscape Prescriptions by MD. He's a speaker, he's an educator, author, has degrees in landscape architecture and urban forestry. Always fun to have him with us. And today we're going to first take a look at ways to make garden easier as you age or if you have some physical limitations. And we'll take your calls as well. So, gardening questions or comments, give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could send an email. Email address ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Mark Dwyer, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Well, thanks for having me. Joe, Larry.
We have an issue as we get a little older. At least I do. It becomes a little more difficult to garden. And I thought you might start with some ways to lessen all of the bending and kneeling that has to be done.
Right. It does become challenging for all of us over time. That's for sure. And I'm falling into that myself, Larry. And I think one of the important things is, as gardeners, we should still be able to enjoy gardening, but the strain on our bodies tends to become a little more pronounced as we get older. And something I've learned over the years is my approach to how I garden and the tools I select has actually probably adversely affected some of my health in terms of there seems to be easier ways of doing things. And when we talk about less strain on the body, obviously one thing is if we have too much garden to maintain, that certainly can be challenging. So the consideration of downsizing is always in many of our minds as we get older. But when we talk about bending and kneeling, I cringe when I see younger coworkers not using, say, a kneeling pad or doing the same activity for hours on end without much change in body position. So there's a lot of that we can do in terms of limbering up and varying our tasks and also selecting tools that are a little easier on the body as well. So there's a lot of things we're doing here at the Wellness Garden with an older group of volunteers to lessen that strain on our body but still be productive and have fun.
Yeah. So we'll talk about a little about what you're doing there. Raised beds, is that a possibility?
No, absolutely. You know, when it gets harder to get down to the garden, that's when we start bringing the garden up. And you know, whether that's a container or something we did at the Healing Garden here in Edgerton is we purchased a whole bunch of galvanized steel stock tanks, these 300-gallon tanks that have the dimensions roughly of, imagine, 8 feet long, 3 foot wide, and 2 foot deep. Drilled holes, we're essentially using them as containers, but what's nice is we've lessened the stooping needs. We're able to garden at really thigh height, but the garden itself also has what we call belly button height gardening opportunities where we don't have to bend at all. We can just reach out, and the garden is literally right there at about 30 inches in height. And, you know, there's the nuances in preparing those gardens, making sure it's good soil, drainage. We want those installations or opportunities to have the longevity we expect. But to your point, Larry, the raised bed is not a new concept, but I think it's definitely something we should consider more as we get older.
Yeah, for sure. Those tanks, those stock tanks, there's a lot of dirt in there. Somebody said we were talking once about soil erosion and a ton of soil would be about what you'd fill a bathtub.
It's even seems like it might even be more than that. So it's a great point because with smaller containers, I tend to rotate and renew the soil every year. I'd like to sterilize smaller containers, compost the original soil from the previous year, and start fresh. But in raised beds that might be touching the ground, you know, are adhered or at, you know, or built on the ground, or elevated circumstances, and these stock tanks would be an example, we tend to just add a little bit of compost every year. But the initial volume of soil is quite large. But we do tend to lean into lighter, well-drained soil mixes with little bark fines. And we're not shoveling traditional garden soil into these systems. We're using kind of our own blend of really well-drained soil with, again, additional compost as needed over the years.
Yeah. So you use vertical gardens then as well, do you not?
We're doing some here, but when I was at Rotary Gardens, we did a lot with vertical planters. And the science of plants growing kind of sideways out of a structure is they're fine doing that. But the nuances, again, of soil prep and drainage becomes important. But we were building vertical gardens that in areas we had no traditional soil. And so imagine an apartment balcony or deck or an area near the garage or driveway where you don't have any ground-level soil, but you build these contraptions to kind of have plants stacked on top of each other and growing sideways out of these. You get very productive use of space but take up a very small footprint, which is great.
Yeah, I for sure. You mentioned tools, planting tools. And what's out there for folks who aren't as strong as they once were or have other kinds of limitations?
Yeah, I feel as a general comment about tools, you know, you get what you pay for, and I'm constantly disappointed with tools that only last a season. And when you inherit grandma and grandpa's tools, you know, built way back in the day, they have the shelf life, of course. So quality tools are still out there. But when you think about how we grip tools in particular, there's a whole category of gardening tools, and actually these tools extend into the kitchen and other. There's the term, of course, ergonomic tools, meaning designed to have less strain on the body. So if you have arthritis or issues of a weakened grip, or you know your forearms hurt, or you know there's issues of jamming that trowel into the ground, they have modified curved handles with pads on them. There's like loppers and hand pruners that are designed to, you have to apply a lot less force. They're designed to actually do the same job with less force. So that, you know, if people were to do an internet search or ask at your local nurseries and garden centers for ergonomic gardening tools, I've seen the light, because I've run into tools where I've looked at them and thought, well, that looks a little strange. And then I start using them and I'm like, ah, now I see. And, you know, you have so much more ability to use these tools in terms of duration and, again, less strain on the body.
Yeah. Helen in West Salem has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Helen.
Hi. Well, I knew I was going to have problems getting up from the ground after weeding. And so somebody suggested a kneeler plus seat. Are you familiar with that? You probably are. It's you can kneel, and then there's like these big arms to grab so you can get up. Or you can turn it upside down, and you sit on the seat because the arms now are down in the ground. So you can be at a higher level. But I love this. It's just going to be great for me this year. Have you heard of that?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you, Larry.
No, go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, those are fabulous. And we have four of them here at the Healing Garden. And what you're describing, and for folks that are listening, I use this at home. I recommend them to everyone. And there's different brands, there's different styles. But in essence, if you use it as a kneeler, so you think about a kneeling pad, the handles that extend allow you to lower yourself down to the kneeling pad and help push yourself up and off it. Those raised handles, when you flip the entire contraption, they become the legs of a padded bench. So I had volunteers at Rotary Gardens. Some would use them as kneelers. And again, getting up and down is so much easier because you have handholds and they're extremely sturdy. Then when you flip it as a bench, you need a pretty level surface. You want to be a little careful there. But some people like to garden while sitting, or whatever you're doing might be at seating level. So this kneeler bench combo exists, and they're excellent. They're easy to clean up. They fold. You can store them in the garage. And I recommend them for everyone. And the four that we use here at the Healing Garden are in constant use.
Helen, you've come on a good thing. And thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. What about watering? Watering cans can get very heavy themselves.
Absolutely. And I recommend, when you think about watering cans, of course, one opportunity is simply use less water. You know, don't put as much volume of water. And but what's great about, say, hoses now, they have hose end attachments where it's just with a thumb, it's very easy to turn on and off instead of constantly dealing with, you know, twisting and connecting. There's a lot of quick connect options for the hose ends. So again, watering is obviously something we're all involved with, but when we get into dragging hoses around, filling watering cans, watering wands, all of that, there are options, again, that are easier on our body. But consider, again, carrying less water if it's cans, particularly with overhead watering. That's where an extended wand for your hanging baskets is the way to go.
Yeah, I like that. Well, weeding, of course, those kneelers are great. What about other tools that you can recommend for weeding that would be helpful?
Sure. Opportunities with weeders that you're standing. So you think about, if you're looking at your garden saying, I'm not getting down and back up very easily, there's options, long-handled versions of just about everything, that typically have a 90-degree grip on the back. And I will recommend there is a brand of tools out of Holland called DeWitt, D-E-W-I-T. And they're excellent, lifetime warranty, amazing tools. And they have hose and weeders and all sorts of things, hard wood handles, but they have that 90-degree grip on the end. And that's something to mention, Larry, with when you think about a rake or a shovel with just a straight grip, your wrists are grabbing that at an awkward angle and kind of jamming it into the ground, and having a 90-degree grip on the end allows you to keep your wrists sturdy, and you can take a lot more force. If you are at ground level, consider padded grips or curved gripped ergonomic handles on your dandelion diggers, your trowels, where the strain on your wrist is distributed along your entire forearm, not just on your wrist itself. So, again, ergonomic versions of pretty much everything works, but look for those long-handled opportunities as well.
Mark Dwyer, our guest today, as we talk gardening, and we've been dealing a bit with how to make gardening easier as well. You know, maybe a little arthritis there. We're just getting older or what have you. These are all good tips. And it's always fun talking with him. And DeWitt Tools, D-E-W-I-T. Tools out of Holland, something that he suggested. I should also mention that we have a link on our program note. Joel Patnott, our producer, put it in. It's a link to the Arthritis Foundation website, the Arthritis Foundation's website. And they have a bunch of tips, and a lot of it's what Mark's been talking about. But if you want to go to ideas at WPR.org/Larry, go to today's date, and within the program notes, you click on the program notes, and you're going to find that link to the Arthritis Foundation's website. So for sure, do that. Mark Dwyer, our guest today, as I mentioned, Joel Patnod, our producer, and Jeff Robbins is our technical director. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in today to Garden Talk on WPR. I wanted to mention that we will be once again broadcasting our show live from Bayfield in Bloom on May 31st. So Friday, May 31st. And you can join in. Join me as we broadcast Garden Talk with a great group of people on the beautiful Lake Superior shores at the Bayfield Pavilion, talking with some great experts about gardening, experts from the area. And this is kind of one of my favorite events of the year. And I'd love to see you there. I think the doors open at 10:30. It's a free event, but we encourage you to reserve your spot. You just go to WPR.org/presents. WPR.org/presents. And you can reserve your spot and a friend's spot and other friends that you were planning to bring along. So it's May 31st, Bayfield in Bloom. It's free, but just to encourage you to reserve a spot at WPR.org/presents. Cheryl in Eau Claire has something for us. Let's go there. Cheryl, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I wonder if your guest or someone might call in who uses the large galvanized, like, water tanks or that kind of idea.
Yeah.
But rather than filling it all with dirt, I've heard that some people can put in hay bales or straw bales and even sticks on the bottom so that then there's just a fraction of the dirt that has to go on the top.
Yeah, that's Cheryl, thanks a lot for calling. Mark, what about that?
That's a great idea. And, you know, that applies to not only the stock tanks, but if you have larger containers in terms of height, you know, you're considering what you're going to be putting in these taller containers or tanks, and you think, boy, do I really need 2 foot of soil in there? And the answer is no, not for the majority of flowers or vegetables. In the case of our tanks, we do have soil from top to bottom. But the idea of sticks or hay bales being some filler, some organic filler, something that'll break down to fill some of the space and then putting your soil over the top is a great idea to save money on soil. You will have constant settling, and you want a lot of drainage holes, of course, for water to work its way through. But that's a good way of providing additional filler. And again, you'd have to augment the soil as you go forward. But it's an excellent suggestion. And it works well in taller containers as well.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about hay bales, but they're going to break down over time. And you've got some good material there to continue to use and just keep adding each year a little bit. That's great. Cheryl, good idea. Thank you. Bruce in Dover, it's your turn. Hi, Bruce.
Oh, my favorite guy again. Hey, long time no call. But I'm out here on the edge of the moraine, okay? So the glacier stopped cold in my neighborhood. And this soil out here is a real buggeroo. So how do I do that? Well, I'm 75. I got ripped rotator cuffs. I have 3 good vertebrae left in my spine. Anyway, I had a shovel that somebody left laying around, and the water rotted the handle completely. So I got in there in my spare time, and I opened up the receiver, and I found me an old piece of galvanized pipe about 6 feet long, 7 feet long. And, oh, man, do I put the fulcrum on that hard-packed moraine clay.
that's not a bad idea for that kind of ground to work on, Mark.
No, that sounds very appropriate, and you have the physics are working for you, because nowadays the shovels you purchase, I feel like I'm going to break them immediately, whether they're plastic or whatever wood they happen to be using now. But that sounds like a shovel that'll go the distance and last a long time.
Yeah, Bruce, that's a great idea. Thanks a lot for calling. I don't know how many shovel handles I've broken over the years, mm-hmm. but I can tell you it's way more than a couple. Thanks, Bruce. Oh, man. Gwen in Horicon, your turn. Hi, Gwen.
Yes, I invested in a pair of the Duluth Trading Company gardening bibs. They have a slot in there for the integrated knee pads that you buy separately, and I also have regular work pants that I was also able to do the same thing. Highly recommend them. None of that elastic around the back of your leg. They're always where you need them when you got them.
Oh, Gwen, thanks. What do you think, Mark?
That's a great tip. Duluth Trading has a lot of great apparel and additional items like that, and when you think about convenience of moving objects and things out in the garden, a lot of us sling things in a wheelbarrow or a bucket, but related to that, there's also like these bucket caddies. Like, you still have an open 5-gallon bucket, but it's you pretty much belt on all these little pockets where you can put your phone, your hand pruners, water bottle, etc. So you're the convenience and efficiency of carrying our items that way. And it sounds like this is a great way of a great product. And I have a coworker that swears by Duluth Trading product in general. So sounds like a good tip.
Gwen, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate that call and that suggestion. I'm going to, how many thousand times I'm down there on my knees and I'm using a tool, but then I need the other tool, and it's 10 feet away.
Right.
Get up, go get the other one. Oh, man.
Yep.
Let's see, a listener emailed to say their grandmother was recently diagnosed with a compression fracture in her back and can't shovel anymore. The grandmother's very active, avid gardener. Do you have any suggestions to make the hobby more accessible to her? That might be the grandchild's can apply some help here, but what do you think, Mark?
Right. It's awkward in that I'm not a medical professional, so I'm wary of recommending anything that might exacerbate her injuries. But obviously, finding a comfort level with certain tools and kind of going through the motions and not, again, creating additional problems. But I tell you, I had a grandmother who gardened well into her 90s, and we had to get her to slow down a little bit because we all get stubborn. You know, we want to keep going, but the reality is, we can find better ways of treating our body and continuing to enjoy gardening. But I'm wary of recommending anything in this instance.
Yeah, other than I think some of the things, or many of the things that you talked about, if the listener who did the emailing could help with finding the right tools, maybe helping getting some raised beds for Grandma.
Absolutely.
And and some of the tools that we talked about, a grandma might even be more than happy to pay for them, or maybe the grandchildren would want to kick in. You know, it's Mother's Day this Sunday.
Right.
I think that would be a great gift for Grandma, and as well as Mom. Roger in Grantsburg, your turn. Hi, Roger.
Hi, Larry. How are you doing, by golly? Got a couple of things for you. You know, you just brought up the raised beds things. Tractor tires work excellent for that. You cut the sidewall out, and you got the straight side going down. You can fill it with dirt, a piece of in the bottom to keep anything from getting up into it. And you can fill them with dirt, and they're excellent. You can stack them too high. Perfect for back people with back surgery or back problems that can't bend over. Oh, and they're, you can paint them green so they look like your lawn if you don't like black. But I got to add in here for your story with the shovel. I have one of these, I just love it, little square shovel, a coal shovel, a little D-handle coal shovel. And I busted the handle on it. It was older than dirt. It had been in a school bus from the 40s. So I bring the shovel out, I use it, I break the handle. I go up to the feed mill up here, and I'm like, oh, I want to get a handle. And they're looking the wall, and they already got replacement handles. Well, okay, great. You know, $22. Well, right next to it, they've got square nose shovels that are the Chinese brand that they're $15 for the whole shovel. And so I got the kid at the counter. I said, what's the deal with that? And he says, I said, well, you get $20 for the handle or $15 for the whole shovel? He says, well, they must be really good wood.
Must be really good wood. Okay. Oh, boy. Roger, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. Stephen Wonderlake had called in to suggest straw bales rather than hay bales could be placed in galvanized tubs. I guess whichever one is cheaper or whatever you happen to have access to. Yeah, straw would work very, very well. Stella in Sturgeon Bay, your turn. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I just wanted to share with you, my husband made some raised beds along our property line, and the neighbor had a cedar hedge planted there, and we had experience of a cedar hedge along the backside of our property line growing into our compost pile and making it impossible to get any compost out. So what we did was we lined these raised beds with a pond liner so that the cedar roots couldn't grow in. And then we filled the beds about half to two-thirds full of washed river sand and then have soil, the rest, filled it up the rest of the way with soil, and drilled a hole at the top of the river sand at each end of the bed and inserted a tube, or anyhow, it made a, made an overflow valve. And what that in, what it has ended up being is that these are gigantic self-watering pots, because rain that falls in goes down into the sand, and if it gets to be too high, it flows out the overflow valve or the overflow hole, and the roots of the plants will grow down into the water to reach the water. So we almost never have to water these. And with stock tanks, you don't, you know, you wouldn't have to put in a pond liner. All you'd have to do is drill a hole at each end of the tank, fill the tank instead of with soil all the way, or with straw bales might work, I don't know. Or we use washed river sand.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks, Stella. And that, why not? I guess it certainly sounds like it's working for Stella and her husband, Mark.
Right, yeah, I got a little concerned when she mentioned the pond liner, because I was thinking immediately, well, drainage may be an issue, and then she addressed that with the not only the washed river rock and the overflows, but it sounds like a system that not only excludes those roots and that competition, but again, the that self-watering approach. That my only concern with, like the stock tank, when she mentioned the stock tank, was simply, we tend to not appreciate the how important drainage is, particularly when we're growing vegetables. So you want to make sure there's not any sort of standing water or mushy situation. So you can always add additional holes, but that drainage is so imperative with just about anything. But it sounds like they really hit the nail on the head with how they can, you know, contrive that setup.
Yeah, it's pretty cool if you ask me.
Yeah.
There's, by the way, there's room for you at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us with your own question or suggestion to ideas@WPR.org, always love to hear the callers and the emails as well, so feel free to join in, we'll get you on pretty quickly. Wanted to mention, I believe there's a plant sale coming up that you wanted to tell us about. So before I forget to bring it up, let's talk about the plant sale.
Sure. Well, I appreciate the opportunity, and I would encourage everyone to always patronize your local growers and nurseries first and foremost. I'm affiliated with the Wisconsin Hardy Plant Society, which is a nonprofit, and we do a spring plant sale, and this year it's coming up next Sunday, May 19th, at the West Madison Agricultural Research Center in Verona. And that's from 10 a.m. till 2 p.m., again, next Sunday, the 19th. And we're offering a huge range of native plants, perennials for both sun and shade. And we also have an amazing array of ornamental types of plants coming from a specialty nursery. So it's a fundraiser for the organization, and the funds that are raised go back into the communities and support projects. And anyway, the Hardy Plant Society would hope that you would come to the sale on the 19th, and I know the UW Arboretum has their sale on the 18th, also 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. So make a weekend of it in Madison and check out these sales.
Yeah, and the native plant sale on the 19th, location for that again, Mark?
That's the West Madison Ag Station out on Mineral Point Road in Verona, just west of Madison proper.
Yeah, yep. What about, you know, jumping worms? I know on the 18th, I think guaranteeing pretty much you're not going to have jumping worms. They have made a big point of that. And jumping worms, that's one thing you want to be careful about. If you don't have jumping worms, you don't want to be buying something and moving those jumping worms into your property.
Right, right. And the UW Arboretum is leading the charge over the last decade on not only finding them, but trying to come up with ways to thwart them. The real concern, Larry, of course, is, and I will say with our sale, everything's everything has definitely been vetted in terms of not having worms, or more importantly, their eggs. The egg casings are near indetectable, and that's what you worry about passing around. And our garden here at in Edgerton, and also when I was at Rotary Gardens, the concern with jumping worms became such that we wouldn't divide and sell or give away plants from the garden or receive them from unknown sources, because those worms are horrendous once they get established in terms of denuding the soil of nutrients, eating plant roots. So be very wary. Even when the neighbor says, hey, would you like a daylily? I'm very concerned about how that worm has worked its way around.
Yeah. Mary in Franklin has a question for us. Let's go there. Hi, Mary.
Hello. I have a chicken that's 11 years old, and she's kind of jumping out of her cage, her fence every day, and she kind of free ranges around my yard, but she digs in my flower beds. I want some kind of solution. I don't like this mulch all over the place.
Oh, so the chicken keeps digging up the mulch in the flower beds. Mark?
Yeah, that's a little bit out of my realm, but I will say I had some clients in Madison that had some chickens out back that were wandering around, and they were also distracted by mulch and some of the better plantings. So we devised a lawn that included clovers and some other things that they like to eat. And also some various herbs. And there, if you get online, there are references to perhaps some other plants that they will be attracted to, and you won't be bothered by the fact that they're going after them. I can't say that would solve the problem, because I've not had chickens myself, so the concern is what to do to distract them. But again, perhaps a more chicken-friendly yard with plants they can peck away at would help.
I was also thinking about the English gardens. The English gardens that I visited, actually was on a WPR garden tour that we did a long time ago. Those flower beds are solid. There is no mulch. I mean, the plants take up all of the room. And that, to me, would be a barrier in and of itself, just to use more plants and less mulch.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I know this instance I mentioned, they had sacrificed an area where they just kept adding mulch for the exact same reason, because they knew the chickens were going to scratch it up, peck away at it, and they just gave them a play space. But if they're getting into your garden proper, that becomes a challenge, of course.
Yeah. Mary, good luck. Thank you for calling. Katie in Fond du Lac. We'll go to you. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to share with you my solution for taking up space in exceptionally large containers where you plant flowers or vegetables, because I have some very large containers. I use empty milk jugs, and I just pack those milk jugs in there and put the dirt on top and allow for drainage holes in the bottom, and it served me very well. There's plenty of dirt for the plants, but I don't have to invest a fortune in garden soil, and plus, if I want to move them, I don't have nearly as much weight.
What do you think? Thanks, Katie. What do you think of that idea, Mark?
It's a great idea, and I've heard milk jugs, and I've heard aluminum cans, and broken terracotta, and a lot of different objects. My two pieces of advice: obviously, make sure you have decent drainage, because a concern with if you have poor drainage in a container like that, the water can shift the milk jugs or anything that might float, because I'm wary of ever recommending styrofoam peanuts or anything like that as filler, because I had an issue of that pushing things out of the a poorly drained container. But with any of those objects that you use as filler, put some filter fabric, some landscape fabric over the top. The soil will continue to settle, but ultimately you have a separation where the soil won't keep trickling through that and possibly plugging the drainage hole. So anything that works, that still maintains the integrity of drainage, I think is the way to go.
Yeah. Katie, good for you. And thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, it'd be a lot simpler to move those containers around for sure. And those stock tanks, actually, I've got a neighbor in my, as I, you know, do my morning run, I was looking at them this morning, has almost like miniature stock tanks that are, you know, they're like maybe 5 feet long, but they look pretty attractive, and the neighbor's got some nice flowers and so forth growing in them. So I'm imagining that these are smaller stock tanks are maybe they've always existed. Just that I never had one that small. Where do you get those? Where do you get those, Mark?
Your local feed stores, or you know, in Wisconsin speak, you know, Farm and Fleet or Fleet Farm, you know, any of your agricultural stores will have stock tanks. And to your point, Larry, you literally can find any size. It's unbelievable the variability in sizes, and they do become instant containers. And we've talked about some ideas on how to add some filler and drainage and such. And for us here at the garden, the five that we're using, we're growing vegetables and herbs that go directly into our cafe. So it's really a nice setup. And we created an instant garden in an area that had no opportunity for plants. So these are in an area that we wouldn't even try growing anything on the ground. So they may offer additional gardening opportunities and be easier for us again as we get older.
Yeah, absolutely. Taylor in Chautauqua, it's your turn. Hi, Taylor.
Yes, hello, you guys. Hey, thanks for doing this, by the way.
Sure.
My wife and I bought three plants from Costco a few months ago, and we're having trouble saving them. We added water. We tried to collect rainwater. Unfortunately, it was from the roof of our house, so we don't think that was the, you know, best approach. But they're, like, turning yellow at the end, and we tried trimming them. We've now replanted them. And outside of, you know, I guess we don't really know what else to do, and we're just going to see if this the new soil and the new water from our faucet is going to help them.
And what kind of plants? I didn't catch that.
Well, there is a palm plant, a dragon tree, and a white bird of paradise plant.
So, and they're obviously indoor plants. Might be, if the leaves are turning yellow, could be a light thing maybe, Joel? Mark?
Yeah, it's tough to say. The fact that you've repotted them, I think, is a good thing. The challenge with anything, any house plants that you purchase, is even moving them or exposing them to a draft, or if they're in a spot in the house where the vents are blowing on them, you start to see some foliage yellow or brown or wither on occasion. But I don't know that you've done anything wrong at this point. It might be just a period of adjustment. But I would make sure that your containers, there's not an issue of them staying too damp at this point in time. But, you know, maybe you could share some photos with a local extension agent. Houseplants can be challenging, but sometimes, again, they do take, you know, they're moving from one place to another, and there is that adaptation time.
Yeah. Taylor, thank you, and good luck. Appreciate your call. Mark Dwyer, our guest today, his business is Landscape Prescriptions by MD, and he's the Healing Garden Manager at Edgerton Hospital. You can join in with your questions, the number 800-642-1234. You could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Mark Dwyer. Great to have him along. And you can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Quick reminder that we'll be broadcasting live from Bayfield in Bloom on May 31st. You are invited to attend. It's a two-hour show. We've got some great local experts, and you'll be able to participate and ask your questions while you're there. It's a free event. Doors open at 10:30 on May 31st, and the event is free. But we encourage you to reserve your spot. Just go to WPR.org/presents. WPR.org/presents. Just heard reports that hummingbirds are back in the area. Somebody called the show just the other day to mention that. What are some good plants to have in your garden to encourage hummingbirds to stop by?
It's, I tell you, Larry, we've seen hummingbirds in the healing garden already.
Yeah.
And it's what we tend to do is purchase lots of salvia. Now, we know perennial salvias are blooming about now, at least in the southern portion of the state, and you'll get 2 to 3 weeks out of those, and you can trim them back to get some rebloom. But I've been leaning into some of the more tropical salvias for summer-long bloom, and it's an absolute slam dunk. And when you think of flower architecture, anything that's sort of trumpet-shaped, like columbine or penstemon, there's a whole range of appropriate hummingbird plants for bringing them in, although a huge portion of their diet are insects as well. But we've had some huge hummingbird populations coming through, particularly later in the summer as they're traveling south. But the salvias for us have gone the distance.
So salvias are great. I've got a friend in northern Wisconsin, Roger, and he often sends photos to Facebook of as many as 25 hummingbirds around his feeder and flowers. So they're always a lot of fun to watch for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Heard you found some pretty cool new petunia variety. Tell us about that.
Sure, it's interesting. It's and as we speak, we haven't planted them yet, but brand new. There's it's called Firefly Petunia. And you won't find it at any garden centers or nurseries this year. They had a select batch, and you could order them at great expense, to be honest, but I had to try them out. The genetics with the firefly petunia, they use the genetics of bioluminescent mushrooms. So in essence, these petunias, which during the day are white, and there's many, many white petunias, but at night, these have that green glow. And I'm basing the description I'm giving is based on photos I've seen, but they arrived here yesterday, and we turned out the lights and realized they weren't glowing, but we realized they hadn't really charged up or hadn't been outside yet. So what I'm hoping to include out in the garden are, you know, somebody walking by and seeing these glowing petunias, because we have staff and patients that may go out in the garden at night. But again, firefly petunias, and they're USDA approved, you know, the genetics I don't even begin to understand, but I have seen bioluminescent algae, bioluminescent mushrooms. Now we have petunias.
And they're firefly petunias. And you, all right, could I go online after the show's over and order some?
I think they had a 50,000 they sent around the nation, and I believe they've sold out. You could certainly get online and see. I think they'll become popular enough that they'll become more available next year, because they weren't offered in retail, to my knowledge. But I would encourage people to Google it up and just read up on it, because we're on the cusp of glow-in-the-dark plants. So that, to me, is kind of interesting.
It sure is. I just bought a bunch of petunias yesterday, and I'll be putting them in tomorrow, as a matter of fact. So,
nice.
Sharon in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Sharon.
Oh, yeah, hi. How are you today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Okay, so I have phlox. And it's growing. It's been slow growing, and they're not flowering. So I'm just wondering about that. I have lilac, I have white, and I have red. And the red is just, maybe 2 years old. And they were flowering when I bought them, but they haven't flowered since. So it's a bit of a conundrum to me.
Phlox. What do you think, Mark?
Well, I guess I'm assuming these are creeping phlox, so they're like a carpet level height. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, okay. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, the creeping phlox for us have already pretty much bloomed out. So the fact that you're not seeing bloom from maybe a plant you've had for a year or two is concerning. There is a possibility that something maybe browsed on it. I will say their growing conditions, they need perfect drainage, and leaner soils are fine for the creeping phlox. So keep that in mind. When you get into the lower woodland phlox, they need a little better soil, but maybe give it another year or two. Full sun, of course, but again, leaner soils, sharp drainage, and hopefully you'll see a return of the flowers. But again, there are some critters that will nibble on them as well.
There you go. You go, Sharon. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. The Healing Garden, I just want to take a minute to talk about the Healing Garden at Edgerton Hospital. And you've been on, you've talked about it a time or two, but what is a Healing Garden and how does it differ from a wellness garden, let's say?
Well, you know, the terms are used interchangeably, and it's a bit ambiguous because I would argue that all of our gardens are healing. You know, we get respite, we recharge, we relax when we're not worrying about weeding and things like that, of course. But this garden behind, just south of the hospital, there's a 3-acre garden space that was planned for the hospital when it was being built in 2010. The intention of the Healing Garden is to be, in this case, all accessible. We've provided raised beds and opportunities for physical, recreational, and occupational therapy. So there's active use. We have a yoga pad and some areas for meeting and that sort of thing. Very heavy in sensory focus, so fragrance, tactile engagement. We lean into very saturated colors for those with vision impairments, so heavy in like the reds and oranges and yellows. But anybody who would walk into the garden today would just... If this garden existed anywhere else, you wouldn't say, well, it's a healing garden as a category. It's just a beautiful garden that has some tweaks and additions, including wide accessible paths, ramps. We're able to get hospital beds out through the garden, which was intentional, of course. So a lot of what's happening in this healing garden, it can be extrapolated at home with sensory plants, raised beds, again. We all should be getting some benefit of our gardens beyond exercise and fresh air. We should be enjoying them, and many of us, you know, that's where we relax.
Yeah, absolutely. And can, you know, here's Mother's Day weekend. Can we, anybody visit those gardens?
Absolutely. They're open to the public, and there's no charge. There's signs that would guide you to it. We're right off of I-90. But we're right heading into allium season. Our ornamental onions are blooming, and we have about 30,000 of those starting up. And we're heavy on alliums because of our deer problem, but if folks were to visit later in the summer, we have hundreds of varieties of fragrant plants. We just planted our popcorn cassia that has flowers that smell like popcorn, chocolate cosmos with dark maroon flowers that smell like dark chocolate. Lots of things you can rub and sniff, and I was watching some kids and their parents go through the garden and just enjoying it. So it is open to the public and can get online and find directions.
Oh, that sounds absolutely wonderful. Back to the stock tanks for a minute. Jean emailed. Jean has some storage bins or whatever, and wondering if these large overturned, if she takes those storage bins and turns them over and puts them in the stock tank, will that help as a filler for the tanks?
You know, I would think so. I think the real test of filler, and I would encourage this of anyone, when you're adding any sort of filler, and we've heard milk jugs, we've heard this setup, I've talked about other things you can use, we heard hay bales, et cetera, is once you get the filler in, I always encourage the filter fabric separation from the soil. But once you've added the soil on top of your filler, water it and let it sit for like a week and keep watering it before you put any plants in and let it settle out because there's nooks, crannies, the drainage, you have to make sure the drainage is good. So don't immediately plant a container that you've put filler and soil in because there's inevitable settling and shifting and let that all happen. So you can make modifications, improvements, changes prior to planting anything. So I think the sky's the limit with the types of objects you can use as filler. And while it does save money, keep in mind, if you're growing vegetables, you want to have a good, you know, some a decent amount of soil in those containers. That becomes important.
Yeah, you need enough. And like if you have a tomato plant, I mean, those tomato plants' roots go down a long ways.
Yeah, the rule of thumb is 12 to 15 inches for any vegetable, but I would argue when we're pulling tomatoes out of our stock tanks, our 2 foot deep stock tanks, the roots are all the way to the bottom.
Yeah.
So they'll take advantage. They'll populate that soil, and so there is a benefit to it, to having deeper soils in some instances.
Our guest today, Mark Dwyer. Mark, a speaker, educator, author, degrees in landscape architecture and urban forestry, and is the healing garden manager at Edgerton Hospital. Nice to have him with us for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. Welcome to Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you with us today as we visit with Mark Dwyer. Mark's business is Landscape Prescriptions by MD, and he's the healing garden manager at Edgerton Hospital. Speaker, educator, author, and many degrees, including in landscape architecture and urban forestry. Questions we have open lines get you on pretty quickly. Maybe some experience to share. You can join in with that as well. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Carrie in Duluth, Minnesota, emailed to share that her spouse cut up an old closed-cell foam sleeping pad to use as knee pads. Carrie sewed pockets inside her jeans for the same purpose, since the Duluth Training Company women's pants with knee pad pockets are bibs. So she didn't want to wear bibs. She also says the root slayer shovel, she likes that root slayer shovel. It's designed so it doesn't slide off roots, which is great for dividing hostas and that sort of thing. And we can comment on that. But their favorite tool overall is a hori-hori tool that can be used to dig or cut. It's all you need most of the time.
Yeah, great recommendations, Larry. You know, I will say with kneeling pads, we talked about the pad and the kneeler slash seat. I have some coworkers that use the knee pads that you strap around your knees, and of course the concern is those moving around. Protecting our knees is of course very important. Root slayer shovels are awesome. I believe they have teeth to them. So when you think about when you hit a root and you keep sliding off of it and sliding off of it, of course I found out they also sever irrigation lines real easily too. So you need to be wary of that. But the hori hori knife, what a great mention. So hori hori knives exist. There's different brands for them, but what the caller was mentioning, in essence, is you can use it as a trowel. It's got a serrated edge. You can use it to cut twine. It's great for weeding, for planting. Usually comes with a sheath, so you can have it right at your hip on your belt. And I will say there's, again, all sorts of brands, but one of the least expensive brands is out of A.M. Leonard, and online you can find this. But they come with a nice rubberized orange handle, so you don't lose them in the garden either. So hori-hori knives are the type of tool you'll have forever and you pass to your kids and your grandkids, and they're utilitarian for so many purposes.
Yeah. Faye in Milwaukee has a question, I believe. Let's go to Faye. Thank you for calling.
I'll do ditto on that knife you just talked about. I love mine. But anyway,
I have a weeping cherry, which has just sprouted, and it's shading. There's a lot of branches that are want to go up, and it's shading a lot of my yard. Can I cut those off now?
So your cherry probably is finished blooming already. Is that correct?
Yes, it did. Yeah.
Yeah, you absolutely can prune as needed. Keeping in mind, weeping cherries achieve height very slowly. So if you're removing things that are in the way or problematic, as long as you're maintaining the form that you like, you absolutely can prune now.
There you go. And in pruning, you're cutting right close to the collar?
Yeah, I will.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Faye, thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. This goes back to the question that came up earlier about chickens. Carlin from Genesee emailed to say they use decorative small wire fencing. It's only about a foot high, and it sort of lines the edges of their flower beds. And this fencing deters their chickens. So decorative small wire fencing.
Hmm.
There you go. Thanks for that suggestion. Appreciate it very much. Megan emailed to say their father just turned 70 and has more stamina in the garden than Megan does. But her dad's secret, he started lifting weights, which has improved his posture. And the father can grip tools, has much less back pain from bending and twisting.
You know, something I never thought of. If I could go back 40 years, Larry, I'd get into yoga and I'd become more flexible. But some of our older volunteers at Rotary Gardens, before we get started, it sounds crazy, but we would limber up, we'd stretch out, and don't do the same task for any great amount of time. It's recommended only about a half hour per task. So if you're kneeling and planting, do that for a half hour and then go do a standing activity or go rake or, you know, really mix it up, because the same positioning can be problematic over time. But, yeah, keeping fit. We just want to keep moving. Absolutely.
Susan called from Duluth, couldn't stay with us, but says that, or wonders if those firefly petunias that are genetically modified, could they harm the other petunias?
I don't know the answer to that. My guess is, I hate to speculate, but the fact that the USDA approved these, because I have to admit, when I first saw them, I thought, you know, Frankenstein-type flowers, no thank you. And then as I read further into it, it became more of a novelty, and I thought, I have to try it. So I don't know with the genetics if that's problematic for affecting other petunias, but my guess is no, because I believe these are vegetatively propagated. They're not, I don't know that they're sterile or what have you, but I have a feeling they're safe.
Michael from Mequon asked about the models of healing gardens. What models of healing gardens at other hospitals did the Edgerton Hospital look at? And how is the Edgerton Hospital Healing Garden integrated into patient care?
Great questions. Oddly enough, I designed this garden back in 2010. So at Rotary Gardens, there's a wellness garden I designed, a circular raised bed garden. And a lot of what we did with our research, particularly with this garden, was with all accessibility, path width, slopes, that sort of thing. So it had to be a functional space that could be utilized. And it's positioned at a portion of the hospital where three primary entrances to the garden, from therapy, from the medical surgical recovery, and from our main lobby, people or patients can come directly out into the garden. We continue to work with our therapy department to devise activities that benefit their patients. So the intention isn't to say, hey, there's some things to do out in the garden, why don't you bring some patients out? It's what can we devise as an activity that would help you with your desired outcomes? Because, of course, it's patient-based. They're trying to achieve something based on the limitations of the patient. And what's exciting is we're really collaborating a lot on the approach to different gardening tasks that, again, benefit these folks, because they'd rather walk I think, 6 laps around the healing garden than be on the treadmill, or come out and do some deadheading and snipping as opposed to doing hand grips. And I'm not speaking for every patient, but we have this beautiful garden that's viewed from 3 sides of the hospital. And whether it's enjoyed passively, you know, viewing, or actively with immersion coming out into it, we continue to refine getting people out into the gardens for their benefit.
That sounds just like a great plan. I love that idea. I'm glad Michael from Mequon asked that question.
Mm-hmm.
a good one for sure. Tree planting, this is a good time for it.
Oh, absolutely. And I would encourage folks, obviously, do a little research on proper tree planting, keeping in mind when you're getting a containerized tree or bald and burlap, that tree that's been dug for you only has 5 to 10% of its original roots. So it's important for you to install it properly, watering, staking, all the proper care to establish a tree. But don't hesitate to look at the opportunities in your neighborhoods where you might encourage others to plant trees, because in my neighborhood in Janesville, you know, Dutch elm disease did a number, and then emerald ash borer came through. And there's so many spots in our urban settings for trees. So whether it's working with the local municipalities or your neighbors, let's encourage more tree planting. It's not just a warm and fuzzy thing to do. It's essential. I think we should all be looking at those opportunities to do it and to do it right.
We have a call from Steve in Lake Geneva. Let's go there. Steve, hello. Thank you for calling.
Yes, hi there. I was just curious what the approximate ratio of the native to non-native plants is, what you guys shoot for. Because, again, it sounds like a largely ornamental garden. So.
Oh, in the healing garden, sure.
Yeah, great question. To be honest, I'd say it's about 50-50. And we didn't decide to go that route, but what we did purposefully include, we have what's called a pollinator berm. And through various grants, we were able to plant 150 native species of grasses and perennials, primarily for pollinators, both nectar and pollen producers. We have integrated some non-native annuals in that mix, to be honest. But we do a lot of seasonal plants, changing over beds, ornamentality. The intention there is to have different color schemes every year. But the native plants are so important for supporting our local wildlife. And we incorporate our native plantings and specifically this pollinator berm into educational outreach programming. We do a lecture series. The library comes here. We have school groups. And I think it's important to show those amazing plants and how they well they do, because I'm rambling here, but I think all too often newer gardeners equate native with not so ornamental or not as beautiful, and that's entirely untrue. And our native plants are adaptable to our soils and dynamite for our wildlife. So our 50-50 mix works well for us, and I just try to avoid problematic plants that will become invasive or, reseed or have issues. So we're very careful with vetting what comes into the garden.
We've gotten some requests for you to repeat a couple of things. One was, what was the popcorn plant that you were talking about?
Right. So it's called popcorn cassia, and that's C-A-S-S-I-A. And many of your local garden centers and nurseries hopefully carry it. And it's a legume. It's a nitrogen-fixing plant native to, I want to say, South Africa. I might be wrong on that. Regardless, what it does, we planted them at 1 foot high. What they do in our hot summers is they'll get 6 to 7 feet. They have these beautiful yellow flowers. And if you rub the flower buds, it smells like buttered popcorn. And it is a gateway plant for kids and for new gardeners. And we're planting 50 of them around the healing garden, and not just the back of the border where they'll get big. We're putting some up front with signs saying, yeah, go ahead and rub and smell this. And to see kids go, Mom and Dad, this smells like popcorn, there's a gardener for life. And so popcorn cassia, ask for it, look for it, and pay whatever price they're asking because you'll enjoy it. It's not hardy. It'll die with hard frost, but it's worth the space.
And the other was the chocolate-smelling plant.
Yeah, chocolate cosmos. And many of us know cosmos as an annual, of which this is. It's native to Mexico. It's actually rare and endangered in Mexico. But if you look mainly online, I don't know how often nurseries carry it, but chocolate cosmos, it is a tuberous root system, but what it sends up all summer are these about an inch to an inch and a half, the darkest maroon you could ever imagine, flowers. And you have to get pretty close, but it literally smells like dark chocolate. So chocolate cosmos, popcorn cassia, and you have a beautiful aromatic garden, and that's a great start.
Jeff in Delafield has something. Let's go there. Hi, Jeff.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. The comment about planting trees piqued my interest. But one of the things I notice as you drive around the state, the amount of trees that are being removed from the landscape by, I'll call it modern agriculture, you just see more and more and more fence lines being removed, woodlots being removed. Seems like they can't remove trees fast enough. And what recourse do concerned citizens that like to see trees on the landscape have to kind of voice their opinion about this, realizing, yes, it's private land, but with the amount of taxpayer subsidies that modern agriculture receives, what say do we have in saying, hey, you know, we don't like all these trees being taken off our landscape at the pace that they are? Thank you.
A great question, and maybe not an easy answer, but I have an example I can share with you. I'm in Rock County, and I'm not afraid to mention this, but along rights of ways, we've had an issue with not only aggressive removals, but a grinding system, not a pruning trees back from the road, but an elevated grinder from a backhoe that just mashes everything back and leaves ragged debris. Some of you around the state have maybe seen this, and it's meant for efficiency. It's meant for mowing down forests, and it's being used to edge back some of our overhanging trees on, and I'm not saying problematic trees. My advice, let me jump to the advice, is to be the squeakiest wheel you can, and not just write letters, but appear in person at the county level. Write letters to your representatives, go to your city council meetings, because budgets for urban forestry are dwindling or don't exist. And I've been fighting this Rock County issue, and the argument is mainly budgetary and safety on the side of the county. And I pointed out that bur oaks that have seen pioneers walk by have been butchered back within 20 minutes. And I'm livid about it, and it's barbaric. And to your point about removals, you're right. I feel the rate of removals is far exceeding new plantings. And I'm always happy to see new installations and trees going in. But I think it's a net loss right now. And we, as tree lovers, tree huggers, have to get involved and become that squeaky wheel.
Oh, Jeff, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And on that note, and speaking of trees, do you prefer the bare root trees or, you know, it'd probably at this point, it'd be pretty hard to get bare root trees as opposed to the potted ones.
Question, Larry, it really depends on the season and the tree. We were fortunate to receive donated oak trees for our woods. We have 15 acres of woods with trails here next to the healing garden. So we received those way back in early April as bare root. And so ideally they were dormant so we could put them in and take care of them. I'm neutral on how I receive the trees. I'm just always concerned about proper installation, and planting them too deep is a huge concern. So keep in mind proper planting height, the staking, and plan for a location where they'll be safe and sound for a long period of time. I think all too often we're putting trees maybe too close or in areas where they'll conflict with overhead wires or our homes. So find good spaces for big trees and use smaller trees in our tighter spaces. It's all about that right plant, right place, and we've all heard that, but it's entirely true with trees.
And in terms of the site preparation itself, there's a couple of things I think that need to be considered there when you're digging that hole.
Yeah, you know, with the hole, it's important to consider, first of all, you know, I don't do a lot of amending of soils around a tree because ultimately that root volume as it extends is going to be dealing with whatever soil it's been given. And I think we know that trees don't grow like carrots. They send a lot of surface roots and they really spread out beyond the drip line or canopy of the tree. But getting a hole that you've prepared properly it becomes important with that planting height, the backfilling, and understanding the nuances of that type of tree, what it needs for soils. And a great example of our healing garden here is on clay, which is quite challenging. And I'm watching service berries linger and die because they don't like being in wet clay that never really dries out. So knowing your soil type becomes important even before digging that hole and adjusting accordingly.
All good points. Here's another question. Another question about the plants for hummingbirds. You did recommend some plants, I believe salvia, but go ahead and repeat that.
Yeah, for perennials, anything with tubular flowers. So columbines are great, but of course they're finishing. In the summer, you get into penstemons. You know, those are excellent. So anything that has a tubular flower, and it's not limited to tubular flowers, but hummingbirds, that nectar is so important for them. But to my comment about salvia, I'm glad we circled back because I want to mention there's a tropical variety called black and blue, and those are absolute slam dunks. So black and blue salvia, they'll get 2 to 3 feet tall with these beautiful deep indigo blue flowers. They are a magnet. And blooming late into the season, and look for an annual called Kufia or cigar flower, C-U-P-H-E-A, Kufia. They're excellent for hummingbirds as well. But if you get online, you'll find a lot of native perennials for hummingbirds, and there's a long list.
Oh, man. Well, here we are. About out of time. What are you up to this afternoon, Mark, and through the weekend? Have you got some gardening in mind?
Do a little more gardening at home because we all know we feel like we're on top of things in April, and then May hits and we get some warm days. I can't speak for the rest of the state, but we're happy here down south to have received ample moisture here over the last couple of weeks. So watering won't be such an issue, but I'm at the point where we're planting vegetables and getting into our herbs established. And here in the healing garden, we're going to hit it running next week with installing our annuals and getting a lot of our veggies going. So it's that time of year. So you just have to prioritize. And to our earliest comments, Larry, of course, take care of your bodies, do things right, and kind of explore some of these ergonomic tools and better gardening practices to take care of ourselves to make sure we can garden as long as possible.
Great way to wind it up. Mark, thank you so much for being with us, and we'll look forward to another visit. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Larry.
Mark Dwyer, speaker, educator, and author. His business is Landscape Prescriptions by MD. You can find that online. He's a healing garden manager at the Edgerton Hospital. And I think if you go to the Edgerton Hospital, they also have some photos of that garden on their site, if I'm not mistaken. I think they do. Anyway, I'm pretty sure they do. Let's do it that way. Jesse LeGrue is back with us on Monday. Do you know how to stream media on your phone or your other digital devices? Well, Jesse's got some advice and some tips for you on that. And, of course, he'll take your other tech questions as well. That's Monday from 11 to 12:30 right here on WPR. In the meantime, thanks for listening. I'll be out and doing a little gardening myself this weekend. Perhaps you will as well. Whatever you do, have a great time. But stick around. Lots more in store. I'm Larry Mueller.